Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Pete Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. To get a flexion!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself and Jay are delighted to welcome along the new head coach of Motherwell Ladies, David Gibson. And also in the absence of Buster, we've got Joe McKelvey along, a regular that is now his stand-in, I think. We'll call him the stand-in guy. Welcome along, guys.
Good to be back.
Late disappointment for Motherwell at the weekend, a 2-1 defeat to St Johnstone. Jay, it's becoming a reoccurring theme of 2016 that we drop points, important points, by conceding late goals. It's now becoming a major question mark over the mentality of the team, the fact that they're not able to hold on to a result and not able to avoid conceding really important goals at crucial stages of matches.
Yeah, definitely. It's a difficult position to be in. It's a tricky situation to get out of, because once you're in that mentality, and you are going into those latter stages of a game, whether you're one goal ahead or clinging on to a point, when you're getting into those latter stages and, you know, the doubts start coming in, the expectations of, you know, chucking it away might start coming in. The opposition team are probably going to be more buoyed by it. They're going to throw men forward thinking that you're going to crumble. And it's a difficult one to get out of, because it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. We're going into games at the moment and there's that expectation that we will concede late on. And it's a vicious cycle, and trying to get out of it is really difficult. And of course, when you're in the position we're in, it's a problem. We need to get it sorted as soon as possible. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know whether it is just hoping that things go our way over the next few weeks and we manage to get lucky and you know, we get that kind of monkey off our back, or whether there is, you know, a genuine answer to it, whether it's a personnel change, whether it's, you know, tactical changes, I don't know. But it does without any question now. You know, the last couple of weeks it's been mentioned, and I think McGee and a couple of others have said, well, you know, it's just coincidence, there's no real problem there. But I think now Saturday has proven that there is definitely a problem in terms of getting into those latter stages of a match, and it's something we need to get sorted as soon as possible.
Joe, it must be said it was a very poor game on Saturday. Very little quality and what Mark McGee described as a very difficult surface. That being said, we go ahead, we looked fairly comfortable. A poor goal to lose in the stroke of half time. And then again, the second half, there was opportunities at both ends before we inevitably lost that late goal. The recovery process is going to be interesting. There's a couple of big games on the horizon just now. And what I've kind of picked up on in the last couple of days is the blame game again. A lot of our supporters are strange in the way the fingers are automatically pointed at the manager. We couldn't really have controlled much more about the way that we lost the late goal. I know you can obviously work in stamina and so on and so forth, but I don't think it's a fitness issue. It just seems to be something a bit more deeper rooted than that just now.
Yeah, I'd agree with pretty much everything you've said there. I mean, Mark McGee said after the Dundee United game that the way Motherwell played would have got football stopped. And I never made Tannadice myself, but I really can't imagine it being a worse game than what it was on Saturday, particularly the second half. We had a couple of corners before we scored, and then when we scored, the goal seemed to be coming, kind of thing. And then, but we lose another cheap goal. We don't close Witherspoon down, and then perhaps Ripley could have done a bit better by keeping the ball out. In the second half, it was just a case of, it was almost like head tennis with some cheap fouls in there. Mitch said, as Dundee United, St Johnstone put the ball down to take the free kick in the last minute. Mitch says, oh, well, we've all seen this film before, and right enough we had. And I mean, I don't think any of us were thinking that we would keep it out at that point, but I agree with you totally regarding the manager, and I don't think it's a fitness issue. I mean, I don't think not having enough in the tank at that stage of the game makes you lose a marker. It's a concentration thing, if you ask me, and it's maybe the players are thinking, when St Johnstone get that free kick in the last minute, they're thinking, oh, we've conceded goals like this the last 3, 4, 5 matches. This might happen again. Something needs to happen. But again, I'd agree with you regarding people wanting to point the finger at Mark McGee. I don't think half our problems are Mark McGee's fault, would you say? He's been doing a good job? Probably not. You probably couldn't say he's doing a good job given the run we're on. But it's not only the blame culture in our supporters that's beginning to worry me. It's the fact that so many people that I hear at games, that I see on Facebook and Twitter and Steelman Online, seem to be absolutely thriving on Mark McGee's failure, and to the detriment of the team, seem to be quite happy to see their own manager not doing well. And I mean, that's just absolutely bizarre and alien to me. First of all, no matter how much I like or dislike a manager, my overriding thoughts would be that I want Motherwell to do well. And there just seems to be so much hatred for Mark McGee just now, and so many people thriving on him, on his failure.
The vitriol was quite concerning for me. There was a few particular individuals that I saw properly losing the plot following that goal. And you see the reports over the weekend of people throwing coins and everything else. I witnessed a guy punching brick walls following a goal, and of course you do get frustrated and you do get disappointed, but all the verbals were at the direction of the dugout. You kind of fear that the next step is someone running on the park or something severe happening, and Motherwell hitting the headlines for all the wrong reasons. We need to get this out of our systems just now and try and focus and being a bit more positive. The automatic, as soon as we lost the goal, the boos ring out and everything else. And that's not happened under Ian Barraclough. It didn't happen under Stuart McCall. It's not a nice club to be following just now, just due to the real negativity amongst the supporters. And it's that if there's a blame culture going on, then blame these supporters that are going along. Yes, by all means, you're paying your money, voice your opinions, but surely even the thickest of person could understand that going along and clearly booing your own team and shouting at your own manager during the 90 minutes is one of the least productive things you can possibly do.
I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, there's so many things that I hear at Fir Park now, and I heard at McDermott Park when I was up on Saturday, that I leave myself thinking, what are you actually aiming to achieve by shouting this? And during the cup game, there was long chancy, you don't know what you're doing, to the manager. And I just can't grasp it. No one's asking anyone to like Mark McGee as a person. Personally, I think he was an effective manager for us the first time round, and especially after he went on the sort of unbeaten run December into January, I thought we were beginning to see signs of him being an effective manager for this time round. I wasn't over the moon with his appointment, but at the same time I wasn't disappointed by it. I couldn't have thought of anyone I would have rather had in charge, so given that, I thought it must be a reasonably good appointment if I can't name a person I wanted instead of him. But And that doesn't mean to say I like Mark McGee as a man. I think he is quite arrogant. I think he is. He does have a lot of front. I perhaps wouldn't like to go and have 10 pints with him on a Saturday night, but if he's a good manager for Motherwell, I'll be happy with that. And if he's not a good manager for Motherwell, I'll continue to get behind him when I'm at games. I'm not going to shout abuse. I'm not going to shout anything that's going to have a negative impact on the team. I didn't do that under Ian Barakoff when I didn't rate him. I didn't do it under Morris Malpass when I didn't rate him. I just think so many of our fans need a reality check.
Well, if you were going for pints with McGee, it would be 10 pints of whiskey anyway. But in terms of the abuse, I mean, it doesn't really matter whether you like him or not. The abuse is counterproductive. There's absolutely no argument against that. You can argue all day about whether McGee's arrogant or not, whether he's doing a good job or not. But abusing your own, abusing the manager, the players, it's just so counterproductive. It's ridiculous. And some of the chants, you know, some of the shouts, and it's not just the shouts, it's the energy and the hatred that they're almost, you know, foaming at the mouth almost from certain people and the Motherwell support. At times you need to remind yourself that you're actually looking at adults. It's a farce at times. I mean, I don't like Mark McGee. I don't need to say that any more times. I've said it far too many already. I don't like the guy. But the idea that, you know, abusing him and some of the players is going to get you anywhere, it's just beyond comprehension. And, you know, guys like, whether it's Josh Law, who, you know, sometimes is targeted, or whoever it is, you know what I mean? It's just, you're going to unnerve these players, you're going to get on their back, they're going to make mistakes, they're not going to try things, and suddenly you are part of the problem rather than just a fan at the side. It's just stupid, absolutely stupid. By all means, boot full time if you're unhappy with what you've seen. Go on Steelman Online, go on Twitter, go on Facebook, absolutely slate the team. But the idea that you're offering anything positive by getting on players' backs and shouting at players and the manager, it makes no sense. But one thing I would point out, Sparrow, when you said about how we need to get out of our system, we'll never get out of our system. This is something that has been in the stands of Fir Park for as long as I've been going. I don't know how bad it is at other clubs, but I remember Duncan Shearer saying he would never sign for Motherwell because they boo their own fans, they boo their own players. I know that I remember reading an interview with Tommy Coyne where he said that when he was asked to sign for Motherwell, he had second thoughts because their fans were notoriously fickle. You know, you look at names down, whether it's Alex Burns, Derek Adams, Mark Fitzpatrick, Sean Fagan, Derek Townsley, on and on and on. There is a massive list of players of all varying abilities, but all have one thing in common, and it was just they were absolutely abused by Motherwell fans. It's something that we have, unfortunately. It's a dark side of the Motherwell support, which has been great over the last few years, thankfully, because of the atmosphere created with the Motherwell boys and things like that. But you don't just, you know, get that out of your system. That is a culture that is in our support, and unfortunately it will remain.
I'll bring David in before he starts to pen his resignation letter in fear of these fans starting to turn up at the Ladies' games. To just start though, David, obviously just arriving at the club,
yeah,
and there is a wee bit of a down period in terms of results for the men's team. Does that kind of transcend over to the ladies' team in terms of the support? I know it must be quite a common occurrence when things are going well that the fans will get along and support everything associated with the club. Obviously, with things not going so well in the park just now, does that make your job a wee bit more difficult?
No, not at all. To be honest, there's been a lot of positivity since my appointment. Certainly a lot of well-wishers and stuff like that on social media and various other outlets. In terms of making my job more difficult, no, because to be quite honest, I've only had, fair enough, one game, which was Sunday there in a pre-season friendly. Our season is still a couple of weeks away from starting, but although there are a few faces there, there's not an awful lot of supporters who come along. And to be honest, given the fact that the way things are going for the men just now, it would be good if some did come along and see us play, because I've no doubt whatsoever that we'll be doing very well this year. So It would honestly be a massive boost to us if people said, well, I'd love to see someone in Motherwell colours doing so well, because we'll be right up the top end of the table this year. So it can only be a good thing if people put more focus on us as a result of anything else going on elsewhere. So, no, not at all.
There does seem to have been a real backing from the club in regards to the ladies' team, a lot of promotion and a lot of opportunities for the ladies to, particularly when they had wrapped up the league last year, to parade the trophy and things like that. That must whet the appetite of the players to take that success and go to the next level and achieve it again, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. It's almost unfortunate that the women's leagues have been restructured this year. So where we would have now been one promotion away from the Premier League, we're now two promotions again away from the Premier League, and albeit a tougher league than last year with the restructure. So we've got so many more reserve teams and things like that coming into our league, and teams that have restructured themselves as well, such as Kilmarnock and Cumbernauld Colts and stuff like that. The league is tough. But I mean, given the success of last year, the girls are all really, really hungry to replicate what they've done last year and go on and push on, because if one thing's for sure, there's a real vision and ambition that the club have got, and all the players that are at the club, myself included, and all the staff, we all share that ambition, so everyone's really, really keen to get going and go and essentially defend the trophy that we've got, because it's almost, well, we need to defend a League Cup trophy, but we've also got a league trophy to defend, because many of the teams that we're playing against this year are ones that we've seen last year, and again, like I said, two promotions away, so we've got a fight on our hands to go and get ourselves up the league. So yeah,
there's obviously a number of very talented players in the squad and well known names in the Scottish ladies games.
Yeah,
names like Suzanne Grant come to mind. The experience of that sort of personnel will surely stand you in good stead going into the new campaign.
Yeah, certainly. Some of them will be the first to admit that although they're very experienced, they've not necessarily got the legs that they once had. But I mean, we played against Stirling University in a friendly yesterday, and they were Stirling University, a Premier League club that are obviously two leagues above us. But they're full of young players, and what we had there was a very experienced group, and you could see their football savvy showing out. Although I've only had a couple of weeks to work with them, they were very tactically disciplined and organised, and we were very, very tough to break down, and we had a good account of ourselves against a much higher team. So I mean, the experience that they have is invaluable this year. They're coming up against teams in our league that, like I say, that some reserve teams that are full of young players trying to push up into Premier League first teams, and other teams that are coming from around where we were last year, they'll all be full of, fair enough, maybe fit and hungry players, but it doesn't beat football knowledge. The football knowledge that my group have got is just incredible, and I'm really, really happy with the group.
For yourself personally, big boots to fill following, taking over from Graham MacArthur, who has done a fantastic job over the last couple of years in building up the Motherwell ladies' side to an established side, if you will. I know you're saying there's still a few steps away to the top league, but that's perhaps a lot to do with the restructuring rather than a lack of success in Graham's part.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, like I said, if it wasn't for the restructure, we'd be one promotion away from the Premier League in such a short space of time. So Graham's done a fantastic job of getting the club up and running and putting together a really strong squad. He's also been a big part of developing a pathway, and now Graham's almost to an extent stepped above me now, because he's still with the club and he's going to do more to develop a whole profile for the club. So identifying a philosophy for us and things like that that will apply to the academy, and starting to really bring everyone together so that there is a clear pathway for players, even at the youngest level, so they can see the first team and how they make it there, rather than just little bits here and there. So Graham's done a fantastic job, and really excited to see what he does now in terms of of the whole rebuild, or not rebuild, but the whole build that he's looking to do to bring us all together as a club and stuff like that. But certainly it makes the job that bit harder that he's been so successful, because usually new coaches coming in come off the back of someone who's been unsuccessful. So it's definitely a change of pace, shall we say, to be taking over at a time when things are riding high.
Speaking for myself personally, I've not followed the ladies' game in great detail. I don't know about Joe and Jay. I've got a rough idea, and Joe and Jay possibly are the exact same, but the profile has been raised with clubs like Glasgow City achieving great success, the Women's World Cup last summer, and also the Scottish Internationals held at Fir Park over the last couple of years. These things all must bode well for the future of the ladies' game in Scotland.
Well, yeah. Glasgow City are actually the club that I've came away from to join Motherwell. I was part of the first team staff there, and we had a lot of great success over the last few years. I mean, we've just completed 9 in a row in terms of league titles and domestic trebles and Champions League and stuff like that. It's all been great, and the support that we had, you just seen it continuing to grow continuously, and people were turning out to see us there on a domestic level. In terms of international level, I'm also part of the backroom staff for the Women's A squad and stuff like that as well, and you see every game that we play, there's thousands of people show up. It's getting better. There's still a long way to go, no doubt, to match what we're seeing down in England, but yeah, the profile's growing tenfold, and it will only continue that way. There's no doubt about it.
Of course, the positive press surrounding the game as well will only help break down the kind of preconceptions of the ladies' game, which we know that it's greatly unfair, and the stereotypes of the game have been poor quality and everything else. Getting rid of all that will obviously increase attendances, increase interest, and finally end some of the stereotypical preconceptions.
Yeah, there's no doubt people would come along to domestic games and international games, and you'd speak to them afterwards, and if it was their first time there, and they'll be very, very surprised at what they'll see, and week on week you'd see it, like I say, domestically and internationally, where people are turning up and telling you that it may be their first appearance, but they'll definitely be back regularly from then on, because while it may not be the fast-paced game that the men have, the players aren't as quick. They're certainly technically on a fantastic level. The range of passing that some of the players have got, their tactical awareness is, especially of the group that I have and of some of the top players, their tactical awareness is terrific. So some of the patterns of play that you get and the competitive edge and the game awareness and stuff like that is just, it's just great. People would be very, very surprised at what they've seen if they had preconceived ideas of what they were going to see if they arrived at a game, but hopefully one game's all it takes to start drawing more people in.
What about the senior coaches of the men's side just now? Have any of them offered you any sort of support and advice in your first couple of weeks in the job?
Not yet. My day job with the Scottish FA means that I see Mark from time to time, but I haven't actually seen him in the last couple of weeks since my appointment. But certainly I'll be popping my head round his door when I get an opportunity to, and saying hi. I'm sure that there'll be a bit of a help there if needed. So he's a nice guy, and he's done a great job at international level, and every time I've been involved with him, he's impressed me as a coach. So I'm hoping that he'll be able to give me a bit of a helping hand if need be. I've spoken to some of the boys' academy coaches, but not a lot of them yet. But there's a good network there within the club, and also the community trust, who have a great group of coaches in the below me in the in the girls' academy as well, so I'm still getting around meeting all of them as well. And no matter where you're coaching, there's always something you can learn from someone else. So I'm hoping that exposure to meeting people like Jimmy Irwin that takes our 17s and other coaches working below him in the 15s and 13s and stuff like that, they'll all have little bits that I can feed off of no matter what. So I'm looking forward to meeting everyone, which is, it's been a slow process so far, but yeah, definitely.
Just on the role at the SFA, from meeting up yourself, I saw that you're the kit man of the Scottish national side. Must present itself with some unique scenarios over the course of that job.
It's a fantastic job, but a lot of my travelling is with the women's A squad. So right now we're involved in the European qualifier campaign, which it's been a great campaign so far, and there's only good things come out of it. We've been at Firth Park. I'm hoping some Motherwell fans listening to the podcast will have been along to watch the game that we played against Belarus, and we're going to hopefully be back there again within the campaign. But aside from that, the travel's fantastic. You get to see the world and work with a really, really talented group of players. On the men's side, my only real involvement has been at home games. I don't travel away with them, but certainly just exposure to those kind of environments and getting to see top coaches work is only good for me as well. It's a great learning experience, just listening to things and noting wee things down when you can. It's invaluable.
Just for those listening, there must be a few dates for the diary in terms of the kick-off of the ladies' season, and I believe you start with a League Cup game in a week or so's time?
Unfortunately not. We actually got a bye in the League Cup, which means we won't start our competitive campaign until it makes it 2 weeks yesterday. We are away to Celtic Reserves in the opening game of the season, so it's good in some ways and not so good in others, because we're now struggling to get a game because we got a bye in the cup and there's so many other teams playing. But at the same time, it gives me an extra week to work with my group before we go into a competitive environment, because obviously joining so late in pre-season, I've only had so much time to talk to my players and stuff like that. So it's got its ups and downs, but looking forward to the start of the season, which will be the 6th of March.
Great stuff. David, if you wouldn't mind hanging about, what we'll do is we'll bring you back in a wee bit later on. We're going to discuss a few things happening in and around the club, and then preview Saturday's big match against Partick Thistle. Jay, a lot of plans made for the 25th anniversary of the Scottish Cup win in 1991. I kind of might be alone in this, but I was kind of frustrated hearing about, and I'm kind of sick fed up hearing about us celebrating a cup win 25 years ago. I would actually like some success in a cup run, even a cup run. Just now, I know these guys are legends of the club and they have been celebrated time and time again. I think we could have just had a celebration at dinner and left it at that. And I can't see the reasoning to get as many people involved as possible and price it accordingly. But we seem to harp on about the good old days, and it takes a bit of attention away from perhaps the failures in cups in recent years, particularly in the last two or three seasons.
Well, I suppose that's just what football fans and football clubs do. You know, personally, I would have liked to have had a dinner in May for the first anniversary of beating Rangers 6-1. But in terms of the cup, I mean, that is just what happens, though. I mean, you know, you've got, everybody goes on about, you know, Celtic fans who go on about 67, you know, Aberdeen fans, you know, it's not the 80s anymore. I mean, that's just, that's part of being a football fan. You know, you look back in these games, you look back at your club's history. If you were lucky enough to be at the cup final, for example, which I was, but I was too young to remember it. But if you were lucky enough to be there and actually have memories from it, you'll look back at them with fondness. I mean, I don't have too much of an issue with, you know, tearing the arse out a little bit. As you know, 25th anniversary, as I suppose, what is that, silver anniversary? You know, if it was the 17th anniversary or something bizarre like that, then I could understand your point. But I don't see any reason not to kind of make a big deal of it. But you're right, obviously, it has to be balanced. There has to be a recognition that, you know, while that was a great day in May in 1991, there haven't been too many of them since then. And it's something that, you know, every season we go into, we want a cup run. It's something we look forward to, and it never happens. So I kind of get what you mean. I mean, you don't want to be getting into the habit of simply living in the past every year in terms of cup, because you're just so bad at it in the modern day. But I think that, you know, having the dinner, I noticed that it's, you know, £60. So, you know, there'll be people who want to get involved in the cup celebrations and the anniversary celebrations who won't be able to, you know, pay for that, won't be able to afford quite a pricey dinner. So, you know, I suppose that's where the Q&A and that kind of thing comes in. So, in terms of the actual agenda, it's not something I've got too much of a problem with. You know, celebrating those past glories is what all football fans do. It would just be nice if, you know, one day we could be, you know, talking about future glories for a change.
I'm sure though in the past we had a 15 year anniversary game at Fir Park. They reproduced the strips and so on and so forth. It just feels that it gets dragged out every so often, and I don't actually know if the club would have went to town on it as much if it wasn't for the fact we lost to Inverness. I think it might have just been a dinner if we got a wee bit deeper into the tournament, but that's just maybe me being slightly sick.
Oh no, I do understand what you mean. As I said, if it, you know, there is overkill, and there's certain things, you know, not, you know, particularly with anniversaries and things like that. Yeah, they can get a bit repetitive, a bit, you know, overdone. A lot of times, it can feel as though it's cashing in. You know, whether it is replica jerseys or souvenirs or dinners that you pay for. Yeah, but I mean, no one's forcing anybody to go along. I'm sure those who want to pay, you know, £60 a head to go to the dinner in Bod will have a good night, and those who don't want to go don't need to go.
For me personally, Sparra saying that maybe they have announced the many events after getting beat by Inverness, if anything, that was what pissed me off slightly about it. It was like I seen these three events coming up and thought, oh, 2 weeks ago I just watched us get knocked out of the cup again. I really don't want to think about the Scottish Cup. That was basically how I took it. Personally speaking, I was far too young to bet the final in 1991, and as much as I've got the DVD in the house and I've watched it countless times, and I long for having been there, I was only one at the time, but the Q&A event doesn't have the same bearing for someone my age, I don't think, because the one that us three attended last week with Pearson, Hamill, McFadden, Lasley, Clarkson, that kind of appealed more to me because those were the guys I grew up watching. I can see how these events would appeal far more to people who were there and witnessed the cup final and have got great memories of it, but unfortunately I don't. I'm still, you could say, slightly bitter that I've not seen Motherwell lift a trophy yet in my 20-odd years of supporting.
We'll debate the finer points of whether Joe has an acceptable excuse, the fact he was only 1 year or so, 1 year of age at the time of the
final. I don't know about Joe being bitter. I'm slightly bitter that Joe's too young to have been at the final.
I would swap you.
Guys, this on Saturday, I'm fed up of saying there's a massive game coming up, because I think it's there for all to see that every game between now and perhaps the end of the split is going to be absolutely pivotal in where we end up at the end of the campaign. Thistle, direct rivals in terms of a league position at the moment, albeit they've got a number of games in hand still to play because their park is an absolute farce. Jay, we still remain reasonably solid at home despite the dip in form. I know County and Inverness have come away with points. under McGee. But that aside, we tend to be pretty strong. Thistle, a team that we've already beaten at Fir Park this season. I don't know why I say this every week, but I still believe that we can go ahead and take the 3 points.
Well, it's quite hard at the moment to really make an assessment. I think going into games, you know, you said there that we seem to say it every week. Every week we seem to be talking about what was a disappointing result, previewing the next game and saying that, well, we've got the players to do well, and if we get a run, you know, top six, here we come. That we're repeating that mantra every week. And I think at some point you need to accept that maybe, you know, maybe it's not quite going to work out like that. Exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, I think, you know, top six would be nice. Pushing up towards the, you know, Dundee and Inverness would be fantastic. But I think the way we're playing at the moment, we're in a relegation battle with Hamilton, with Thistle, with Kilmarnock. I do Dundee United have enough to call themselves back in. You know, a good result for them against Hearts. So I think we're now at the stage where you can talk all day about how we've got, you know, such a great squad and some great players with fantastic reputations and a wealth of experience, and, you know, how good our team on paper is compared to the other teams around us. It's just not happening on the park. We're in a relegation battle, and I think until we start getting things right on the park, we need to accept that it's the teams behind us rather than the teams ahead of us that we need to keep an eye on. Whether, you know, things start to fall into place on Saturday, we will see. As I said, it's hard to make a judgment at the moment. We seem to have got a settled team. McGee had his lineup. He had, you know, the personnel that fitted in that, and we were playing well. And then it seemed as though as soon as Grimshaw left, the whole balance left the team, and suddenly we're kind of, you know, scraping around week on week, not really knowing who's going to be playing, what the tactics are going to be, how we're going to play. So it's really difficult to kind of, you know, second guess or predict what's going to happen in the weekend coming. There's no doubt about it, though. The game on Saturday is a massive game, just like a lot of these games, particularly this month, are. You know, we said, I think, in January that the month of February was really going to shape our season. If we got a good run and we picked up points, then we could really be pushing for top six and possibly even Europe. Instead, we find ourselves, you know, languishing at the wrong end of the table. You know, going into a game on Saturday against a relegation rival who, as you say, have four games in hand on us, it's not a good position to be in. But, you know, who knows? It's really hard to call at the moment. I guess there's two camps at the moment, as well as with the manager. There's those who like him, those who dislike him. I think there's also two camps in terms of the players at the moment. There are a lot of people who seem to be saying that, you know, guys like McDonald, McManus, Johnson, Lasley, Moult, all these guys, you know, they're far better than the players at Aki's, at Thistle, at Kilmarnock, and so we'll have enough to stay clear of the relegation. And then there's other folk who are starting to find a lot of fault with the players, and I think that there's a lot of merit in that. I think that, you know, the likes of McManus, you know, on paper, McManus, you would imagine, would stroll into the Aki's team or the Thistle team, but on the park, he's been really poor for months on end. Marvin Johnson, you know, he's the kind of player who on YouTube might have a 5-minute highlights package that makes him look like Ronaldo, but he flatters to deceive consistently every week. I think once we recognise that the kind of the idea that on paper we're a good football side doesn't actually translate onto the park, then you can start to realise that maybe this idea of, you know, putting a few wins together and pushing up for the top six, I don't think it's going to happen. I think that we need to kind of make ourselves hard to beat now. We need to accept that we're not going to be playing silky football. We're not going to be, you know, putting two or three goals past teams. I think we need to accept that we need to make ourselves hard to beat, hard to break down, and we need to grind out results to make sure that we're not in the bottom two spots come the end of the season.
Joe, it'll be interesting to see if Mark McGee persists with the formation that he proclaimed would get football stopped. He went with the same starting 11 for Saturday's game. Unfortunately, Scott McDonald pulled up in the warm-up, was replaced by Wes Fletcher. McDonald back would be a huge boost, particularly given he got his confidence-boosting two goals against United at Tannadice. Louis Moult back in the score sheet after his first real dry spell at the club. We've certainly got the firepower there in that regard, but as Jay points out, it's a confidence thing, it's a mentality thing. I suppose the atmosphere at the game will play its part as well. There's a number of contributing factors that need to be looked at when you're considering this game.
Yeah, definitely. But as you say, I hope the team are backed by the fans from the start on Saturday, and I hope to kind of make for a more pleasant atmosphere than we've had at Fir Park lately, because I think that will be key. And I do think McDonald was a massive loss to us on Saturday. Fletcher didn't have a great impact in the game. I mean, I think that could be down to match fitness. He's been injured on and off for a lot of the season, not being able to break into the team. But McDonald has had the good games and bad games this season. But when used in a front two, I think he's a very vital player to us. And I hope the precaution of leaving him out on Saturday means we'll have him raring to go this Saturday. It's for Johnson is one he's been. He was very, very good in that spell we had November, December that saw Mark McGee become manager in the month. He was very, very good then. But since then, he's turned in poor performance after poor performance. And the thing is, he's as inconsistent as the team is. I can't recall many games since he joined where he's played well and Motherwell haven't played well. And in the same on the flip side, when Motherwell play badly, he seems to play badly. So it does seem to have a spark that when we're good, it needs to be there. So, I mean, really looking for him to step up. I can't imagine we'll be going with the same formation that he said would get football stopped. I think there was almost an element of not wanting to change a winning team in that. And that kind of came through in the fact that Ham will come on at half-time for McFadden, who, although his contributions were largely from set pieces, was perhaps one of our most dangerous players in the first half on Saturday. And the one criticism I did tend to have with the team selection on Saturday, this might sound like a bizarre criticism, because it wasn't with the starting lineup, it wasn't with the original subs bench, but it was in the fact that Joe Chalmers was the standby player to come onto the bench. I mean, if you look at that, people were coming around at the end of the game and asked why we were deploying Ainsworth as a centre-forward when we brought him on for Fletcher. I mean, it was clear at that stage of the game we did need a freshness. That much was evident. I mean, when you look at what the bench ended up, we didn't have a centre forward on the bench. And for a team that started playing off a 3-5-2 with no full backs, we had a right back and two left backs on the bench. I mean, I think like had we like even I know we don't have many more centre forwards in our ranks now with Mackin and Moore being out on loan. But I mean, even if we had something like Thomas who could have come on and gave us a different option.
Thomas was out.
Oh, was he? I'll take back that criticism then. But someone who could have come in there. And I just think that the way, if he was playing that team to not change a winning team, then he left us very sort of limited to change if it wasn't going wrong, because you take off McFadden, you bring Hamill on for McFadden. McFadden's a centre-forward who's, again, not on the bench. It's that was the one criticism I had, so I hope we keep that in mind. And I certainly think that if the 3-5-2 worked against Dundee United, it's not necessarily going to work every week, so we just need to take it from there. We're fresh from playing Partick Thistle a couple of weeks ago, and again, another disappointing late defeat, so hopefully he's assessed the pros and the cons of what happened that night and picks a team based on that, and a team that he thinks can go out and beat Partick.
David, how hard is it to keep morale up when things aren't going so well in the dressing room? The team have suffered a number of late defeats, and as fans it hurts to lose a late goal and have to travel home. It must be a hell of a lot worse as a player or a manager when you've suffered such disappointment late on.
I can't, to be honest, speak from a wealth of experience on this one. Apart from a few Champions League experiences when I was at Glasgow City, it's tough, there's no doubt about it. And you'll sit on the bus or the plane or wherever and spend a lot of time reflecting on it and going over it in your head. And as a coach, your first thought is what do we need to do to fix it? You'll be on the bus and you'll have the DVD in your laptop or or on one of the tellies as soon as you got on the bus, and you'll be analysing and over-analysing, and that's the one thing you need to be very wary of as a coach, is making sure you don't over-analyse things. Certainly, like you say, it's just as tough to take from the playing personnel or the staff as what it is for any fan. I can assure you that nobody wants to lose games. So, yeah, I'm sure that players will be feeling late defeats as much as any fan.
Just on the topic of morale, I was thinking we'd seen today in Steelman Online once again a repeat of what criticisms of the players went on last week. Last season, sorry. And I noticed the kind of thing where there was a photo of Scott McDonald and McFadden out on Saturday night, and to me I found it really, really puzzling that people were critical of that, because, I mean, you get yourself into such a catch-22. These fickle Motherwell supporters want these players to be down in the dumps after a defeat and not want to leave the house, but by the same account, they want them to have the same zip in training during the week and to go out and play with confidence the following Saturday. I can't process that either.
I think the openness of social media and everything else gives people perhaps more of a sense of entitlement than they actually should have to celebrities, to footballers in our case, as we're discussing. I think it was perfectly innocent. It would be a bit different if Scott McDonald had posted it up in a social media account of his at 10 o'clock on the Saturday night. It was two or three guys, I don't know if they were Motherwell fans, had asked for a picture, and the guys obliged them. I can't see anything wrong with it whatsoever. I think it'd have been much worse if they had told them where to go and refused the picture, and then it becomes one of these storm in a teacup scenarios like we talked about in last week's podcast. If we're going to get het up about that, then we stand no chance. And I know we're talking about people maybe moaning a bit too much, and Christ, we're guilty of it every week in this show, but I really don't understand people's frustrations and people's concerns with that. Above all, it's got nothing to do with it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the view I was taking. And also, if it gets to the stage where you meet a person out, a footballer out on a Saturday night, and then you put the photo onto your social media account, and before you know it, it's on supporter forums and all that, then you're going to take away the sort of the bond that might exist between players and fans. And because, like, can you imagine if, I don't think in any scenario that McFadden or McDonald will get chinned by the club for it or anything, but if it gets to the scenario where they get pulled up for it, then the next time they do might go out on a Saturday night and someone asks them for a photo, they're going to be reluctant. They're going to have to kind of act almost snobby to turn their nose up at fans. I mean, it's a terrible trait you get of Motherwell fans seeming to want the players to, just because Motherwell get beat, just not leave the house, not enjoy their lives.
Well, it's also worth pointing out, in case there's anybody who's listening who hasn't seen the photo. I mean, it's all, you know, as you guys have said, but, you know, a couple of guys with McDonald, with McFadden, you know, it's not as though they look absolutely out of their brains then. I don't think there's even any drinks in the photo. I mean, for all we know, both of them could have had, you know, an orange juice all night. This idea that because they were in, I think it was the Corinthian they were supposed to be in, or they must have been out in the lash. I mean, it's just, you know, filling in the gaps so that people have something to moan about. Presumably, you know, the actual routine should be that if they don't win a game of football, they get chained to the radiator for the week. I mean, it just makes absolutely no sense. I mean, what, are they not allowed to go out for maybe a drink with their wives or a meal with their kids? I mean, you know, where do you actually draw the line? I mean, it's just, you know, farcical, kind of finding a photo of a couple of guys taking their photo with Motherwell players, and suddenly that is an outrage because we've lost a game of football.
Yeah, discouraging it, if anything, only leads to a drop in morale rather than a raising one, and is detrimental for me. I mean, it's not as if it was like, as you say, it was a photo where there wasn't even any drinks. Neither of them looked intoxicated whatsoever. It'd be different if it was like the one with Scott Brown last year, where he was lying in an alleyway eating his 4 a.m. kebab. But it was like, I mean, it was just like they were out for the evening, being pleasant to fans, and yet that comes in for criticism. It seems when Motherwell lose a few games of football, then our fans grow super sensitive to everything.
Or the football of you with Fraser Kell.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it sounds like we're really giving our own supporters a hell of a lot of hard time tonight. I think it's possibly the same when the chips are down for most supporters, but it just feels it's more prevalent just now because we're in that scenario and things aren't good, basically. There's not a good atmosphere about the place, and I really hope we kind of snap out of it and things get better soon. Jay, we'll wrap things up with the Remember Well question for this week.
It was actually really well responded to this week. Usually get a good few number of responses, but this one kind of seemed to capture the imagination. Basically, I was in that airspace in East Kilbride on Saturday, and I'm pretty sure I saw Jim Griffin. So it was just basically, you know, who have you bumped into or spotted in quite a strange or unexpected place that used to play for Motherwell or currently does. We have Lewis Wallace said, Keith Lasley in the queue for a train out to Hampden at Central Station for the Wales game. Bobby Steelman says, I saw David Cooper and Ian Ferguson coming out of the bookies at Irving Cross in the morning of the 91 Cup final. Craig McMichael, I was doing a radio course in New College, Lanarkshire in Cumbernauld a few years ago. We were in the studio and in walked one of our tutors with two other guys giving him a tour of the Cumbernauld campus. One of them was none other than Jim Griffin. So he obviously gets about Griffin. Scott Kippen says, bumped into Keith Lasley, Hamill and Moore after we pumped Hamilton at Fir Park last season. Don't think he actually says where, so that kind of defeats the purpose of the question. Niall Kane saw Henrik Ojama and DiMaggio's in Hamilton. Ian McGreevy says, was randomly approached by John Spencer a few years ago before the MLS Cup final because I had a Scotland flag with me. William Turner said Richie Foran in Hamilton Palace. I mean, that's not a real surprise. I suppose the surprise is he was in the Mega Bar that night. Nick McDonald said Phil O'Donnell in the ice skating when he voted me Miss Aquatech 1992. Maureen Cutford, visiting my dad in hospital a few years back following his knee replacement operation, my eyes kept being drawn to the fellow visiting the chap opposite. It was Tom Boyd visiting his father-in-law. Who else have we got? We've got mentions for Stuart McCall at Air Beach, Roy Essendoe packing his messages in the old Asda at Motherwell Precinct. Donald Oliver once saw Stevie Kirk in Tesco Colton and asked him, are you Stevie Kirk? But unfortunately, Donald hasn't then told us whether it was or not, so he's kind of left us hanging there. Someone saw Andy Dow in Bell's Hall Post Office. I'm not rhyming off the names of the actual people here because there's far too many of them. Chris Livingston saw Sasa Churchich swatching jazz mags and John Menzies in Motherwell. What else do we have? We have Colin Lumsden, Stevie Kirk singing karaoke in the new century. Derek McLaughlin says Mark Fitzpatrick working at Glasgow Airport Security. That also got a shout from David Frame, who said Mark Fitzpatrick confiscated my shower gel at Glasgow Airport Security. And Stuart Gunn says that he bumped into James McFadden at his work today. So a good number of responses there. I don't know if you guys have got any examples of Motherwell players that you've met in weird or wonderful places.
I've not particularly got one, I must confess, but what I think if players are getting a hard time for going out the night of a game. You were at airspace jumping about in trampolines while Mother were playing. What's that all about?
It wasn't, it was later on.
All right,
so get it up,
yeah. I've got a couple actually. I seen the long throw specialist James O'Colley in Woolworths on a bank holiday Monday one May. Well, I say one May, it'll be May 2001 because it was the only year he was here. The other one I have was I saw Brian Kerr in Hamilton when I was coming out of uni one day, and he was building a wall next to a house. What raised my suspicions of it being Brian Kerr was he was standing with his hands and his hips while the other guy done all the work.
He owns a sandwich shop besides Bill.
Yeah. It later transpired that was the Wall Forest sandwich shop. But at the time, I was like to think of him as a bricklayer and thought that he must lay four spectacular bricks a season to keep himself in a job.
Guys, I think we'll wrap up there with that fantastic anecdote by McKelvey. David, thanks very much for coming on. Really enjoyed having you, and all the best for the season coming up.
No problem, guys. Hope to see you along at a ladies' fixture very, very soon.
Yeah, we'll certainly do our best. Jay, Joe, thank you very much, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers, Barrett.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.
Hey, hey.